Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Puppy sounds that we didn't even know were running. Happy 99th birthday to Betty White, our longtime pal. A little bit later on in the show, we're going to go back into the archives and share one of the many interviews that we did with Betty White, both that we talked with her in California. We talked with her here in Chicago. She was in studio with us a couple of times. Very, very happy that we've got such a lovely, long-time relationship with her. And you'll enjoy this conversation that we've got coming up a little bit later on. Nice to have Don Kleppen with us this morning for Schwanee, wherever he is.
Thank you, Dean.
Today, we're not 100% sure.
Right.
Are we ever?
I got no word.
I started a rumor about a half an hour ago that the rash flared up and he couldn't come in today. I have no idea if that's true or not. I suspect that it might be.
Sources will confirm eventually.
He called me this week. Said, just want to let you know that I won't be in this week. I'm not going to be on the show this week. It's like, okay, all right, thanks. We'll get by somehow. Who is this again?
Right. I don't recognize the number.
Yeah. So, Schwanee, wherever he is, I hope he's enjoying his day off. Don Kleppen manning the newsroom today, and Andy Mazur really stepping up today.
Big time.
To fill the void. Andy, when he heard that Schwanee was off today, said, I would really love to do the far-flung forecast for today.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big responsibility. I mean, you've handled some big jobs here at the station before.
I know.
But, you know, taking over the far-flung forecast, you know, today is, you're up for it? You're ready?
Yeah. You know, hitting send on that email that I sent you last night was one of the more nerve-wracking things I think I've ever done in my life. Because if you said yes, the pressure was definitely on. And if you said no, hey, at least I offered. But you said yes, so I'm ready.
Would it have been crushing if I said no?
No, it would not have been crushing at all. I would have gotten over it in a couple of weeks.
No big thing.
But other than that, it would be good.
No, we'd rather you not do the far-flung forecast.
As a matter of fact, why don't you, like everybody else tells you on Twitter, stick to sports.
Right.
Oh, you get those too?
Oh, I get a lot of that
you
stuff.
You get those too?
And I don't even tweet anything controversial. I just get a couple, you know, stick to sports kind of things.
Why don't you just talk about showbiz? Exactly. I get it. That's what I get all the time.
Because you don't know anything else, of course.
Right. Right.
Life is that one dimension.
And as Americans, we have no right to have an opinion.
No.
Anything else.
That's right.
Nah. Not that Andy ever puts anything I do. Yeah. I put controversial stuff on. But Andy is, you know, couldn't be more PC, you know, polite. I should say polite.
Polite, yeah. I mean, I like to get along with people.
Polite and courteous.
Yeah. Well, when I mentioned that I could do the far-flung forecast, he did throw some bad words around.
Oh,
he did get pretty intense.
He yanked it away from you. You were planning on doing it, and then he yanked it away. See, I didn't know this backstory.
I think the actual conversation kind of went like this. Hey, Don, I've got the far-flung forecast. Don saying, oh, thank goodness.
Well, I told him I can't fling it that far. I was like, I just never learned, you know?
Oh, I'll bet you can. I'll bet if you tried, you could.
Maybe.
So we have something interesting that's going on. During, you know, Don had the story about the puppy adoption, the dog adoption that's going on. And then, you know, for a hilarious joke, I played the puppy crying sound effect that we have. Wait, that would not be it. That would be Golden Girl. So wait, let me get it. Here we go. I played this, and from this we got, my dog is looking at the radio and tilting his head. Which is the cutest thing that a dog can do, by the way.
It is.
Totally.
It is.
The dog tilting his head is the cutest thing a dog can do.
Yeah.
Another text says, Dean, whatever that dog was saying, my dog is now searching all over the house looking for another dog. 847 area code. I don't know where you got that puppy sound, but it obviously worried my Basset mix. She is now crying in unison.
Man.
Wow.
I got a text that Otis, his ears perked up and was kind of looking around as well.
Such a communal species, dogs. You
That's
know?
So interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. They're there for each other.
That's so interesting that we play a little sound effect like that, and the dogs go, they don't go nuts exactly, but they are reacting. So sorry if it caused any disruption in any of your homes today. Maybe we can, you know, mention the Alexa word.
Yeah.
And we can set off a few more things in your head.
I say the A word and then play the audio and see how that goes.
How many things can we set off in your house in one morning? That will be our task.
Yes.
On this show here today. So, number one, we're keeping an eye on everything going on in Washington. We've got resources all over the place. Keeping an eye on a serious note of anything untoward that may be happening there today. There's a lot of talk that something might happen on the Sunday before the inaugural. So hopefully nothing will. Hopefully it'll remain eventless until we get past all this. But we are keeping an eye on that. We'll break in with anything that may be going on. We have a short show today. Like a really short show today.
Yeah, 10:45 for Northwestern basketball today. They're hosting Iowa, so Dave Ennett and Joey Meyer will have all that for you starting at 10:45.
Now, see, I was told I was off at 9:20 today.
You could be. I mean,
is that not right? Because yeah. It's not. It's like 9:19, and that's really all the material that I've got for today anyway.
Followed by the sad puppy hour until the pregame.
Well, clearly, we could get away with something like that.
I think so.
Just it's playing possible. Puppy sounds for an hour is more response than we normally get.
It's a new audience. This is a new audience we're tapping into.
Once again, breaking ground here on WGN. It's the all puppy crying hour. All right. So we've got Dave Ennett coming at what, 10:45?
10:45.
All right. So that means that we've got a short time to get a lot in today. As I'd mentioned, we're going to go back into the archives and play one of the interviews that we did with Betty White. She was here in 2009. She came in the studio on a Sunday morning, early Sunday morning she came in. And we sat and talked for quite a long time. We're going to share that entire interview with you coming up a little bit later on in the show today. We've got some commemorations. Tomorrow is Martin Luther King Day. In the United States, and we're going to share excerpts of his most famous speech coming up later on in the show today. And I just wanted to start off before we get to the far-flung forecast and Dr. Kevin Most and, you know, some of the regular things here on Sunday morning. Just wanted to extend condolences to the family of Jim Tillman, the longtime weatherman on several stations in Chicago, the brilliant aviation expert who was featured on many TV stations in Chicago, talk show host on many stations here in Chicago. Jim Tillman passed away yesterday at age 86. Jim Tillman, as many of you will remember, I think is one of the greats in Chicago news. Not only did the weather on a variety of stations, but as his regular job was as being a pilot for American Airlines, he was the fifth African-American pilot in America, the fifth African-American pilot in America, and the third African-American pilot for American Airlines, which, back then was a pretty darn big deal. He told stories in interviews of how, in uniform as a pilot, he'd be walking down the corridor at the airports going to fly a plane, and people would stop him in the corridors to carry their luggage.
Oh, my God.
They thought he was, a baggage carrier. because they saw an African-American man in a uniform, and they figured that naturally he couldn't possibly be a pilot, that he had to be the guy lugging the suitcases around.
Man, that's really unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy?
It's amazing life, though.
That's crazy. But, you know, he overcame it, and what he said was, often, if he had time, he would carry the luggage for the people.
Oh, man.
And then, you know, take the luggage wherever it was that they wanted. And then he would explain to them that I just want to let you know that I'm the pilot of your plane. And that I'm not the porter.
Look at this. A smooth landing in everything he does.
Yeah.
That guy was great.
Yeah. I mean, and you can just imagine in that very calm, cool Jim Tillman sort of way that he had about himself. I remember him on, you know, the many times that there were airplane disasters. Jim Tillman would be on the air marathon broadcast style, you know, explaining, you know, what's going on and what could have happened, et cetera. He was just a top professional in every way. And who remembers Tillman's Tempo, the talk show that he had?
Hmm.
I want to say it was on like Friday nights or Saturday nights. It was just a lighthearted little talk show, you know, kind of like Irv Kupcinet had a show. He would sit around and talk with whatever celebrities were in town that week. Jim Tillman did the same thing, Tillman's Tempo. Remember that very well. He retired from flying in 1994. He retired from television in 2005. This is a sad note to this as well. 6 months ago, Jim Tillman's son, who was also named Jim Tillman, passed away from kidney cancer. So double whammy for the Tillman family. Our condolences to them, our love to them. One of the greats in Chicago news, Jim Tillman, 86 years old. And we're very sad about that. All right, let's take a little break here. And Andy, you're telling me that it's a good one.
Well, I mean, that's my own opinion. Hopefully you'll share that opinion.
All right. Well, we'll find out.
Okay.
Andy Mazur, our guest far-flung forecaster, coming up next on WGN. And now at 9:27, ladies and gentlemen, it is our pleasure to bring to you America's most beloved feature, the far-flung forecast. A fascinating compendium of interesting facts and figures each week presented to you by, well, he's not here. But this week, presented by the one, the only, Andy Substitutus Mazur.
All right. Thank you so much. And I'm glad you were talking about the late Jim Tillman, because it kind of plays right into what we're talking about here for the far-flung forecast. For today, as we go to New York, New York, where it was 12 years ago on Friday that a miracle of aviation took place. It was a cold afternoon along the Hudson River. It's 21 degrees that day. Started off normal, as all others, for airplane captain Sully Sullenberger.
Oh, boy, here we go.
His crew and passengers. Also, Sullenberger was piloting U.S. Airways Flight 1549 when just a few seconds into the flight from New York's LaGuardia Airport, the plane struck some birds, and the rest was history. Here's their brief conversation between the plane and air traffic control.
Cactus 1539 hit birds. We've lost thrust on both engines, returning back towards LaGuardia.
Okay, you need to return to LaGuardia. Turn left, heading up 220.
220. We're unable. We may end up in the Hudson.
Hi, Cactus 1549. It's going to be left traffic to runway 31.
Unable.
Do you want to try to go to Teterboro?
Yes.
Cactus 1529, turn right 280. You can land on runway 1 at Teterboro.
We can't do it.
Okay, which runway would you like at Teterboro?
We're going to be in the Hudson.
And Sullenberger calmly landed the plane in the water in plain view of the New York City skyline. 155 passengers aboard. Miraculously, every person on that plane survived thanks to his quick thinking and skilled piloting in 2009. And, of course, the adventure was depicted, as you know, on the big screen, the movie Sully, where Tom Hanks played Sullenberger back in 2016. It was January 15th, 2009. U.S. Airways Flight 1549 landed intact in the Hudson River. No fatalities. Sullenberger, by the way, will celebrate a birthday next week. He turned 70 on January 23rd.
70? Wow.
Turned 70.
I would have thought older.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. I was watching a couple of things to prepare for this, and just the calmness and the collectiveness between himself and the first mate, his first the co-pilot.
Yeah.
He was talking about them thinking in unison without having to speak, and it was interesting to get his thoughts about that. And you know, I don't think anybody will ever forget that day where there's an airplane, a 737, sitting in the Hudson River.
Amazing. Well, you know, it's amazing. I don't think I've ever heard that interchange between the control tower and the and Sully, where, you know, he's going, we may have to land at the river. And they're going, why don't you go to Teterboro?
Yeah.
Can't make it. Which landing field do you want to go to? Teterboro. We're not going to make it.
Yeah, he was
oh my God, I would be like screaming.
Yeah, he said they were losing altitude at the rate of, if you were in a big building, 2 floors per second.
Oof.
And he had no time. And he was trying to think about, you know, because there was no depth perception from, you know, a runway or anything on the horizon. It was just water. And he was really concentrating on making sure that the nose was at a proper attitude to land so that it didn't submerge and it didn't break apart.
Wow.
So he had to think about all that kind of stuff and just also, oh, yeah, by the way, there's 155 people that are depending on you.
Phew.
Plus your crew.
I interviewed Sully when that movie came out.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed the cast. Clint Eastwood directed the movie. I interviewed him and Tom Hanks and... a couple of the you know, the B players in that, but I remember how nervous I was getting ready to go into the room with a real life American hero,
yeah.
A real hero, and you know, I'm fawning all over him for his courage and his calm, and he's you know, he's just saying, oh, you know, there were a lot of people involved in, you know, getting this done. He was like, you know, deflecting,
yeah.
Whatever accolades I was trying to put on him, you know, saying that everybody was involved in landing that plane. But really, there was just one guy.
Just one guy, and it was Sully Sullenberger. By the way, in New York City today, they're expecting partly sunny skies, windy day, a high of 44. Right now in New York City, it's 39 degrees.
Wow. That's a good far-flung forecast, Andy.
Well, thank you very much.
I think you did a very nice job with that today. I don't know. Should we let Andy do the far-flung forecast again? Again? Should we let that happen, do you think?
I was going to do Betty White's birthday.
How to help an agent.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The wrong sound effects. Yeah. We're having trouble with the sound effects today.
I was going to feature Betty White's birthday, but it was not that far flung since she was born in the area.
Very true.
So it wasn't far or flung, so I decided to go with the other one.
You are a stickler for details like that. Well, excellent job.
Thank you.
Shawnee's fired. You're in. In just a minute, we'll get to Dr. Kevin Most in our weekly visit, talking about everything COVID-19. We've got a short show today, so I'm trying to pack in a lot of things that I think are important. And one of those things that I think is important is tomorrow being Martin Luther King Day in the United States. And normally on MLK Day, leading up to it, we play a portion of the I Have a Dream speech, just to remind us of where we were and where we are going and where we are today. I think this speech has a whole new poignancy today, given what happened in pretty much within the very same body of space a week and a half ago at the Capitol building with the melee that took place there. Martin Luther King's words mean something extra, given where we are today with race relations and where we are in America right now. So in commemoration of Martin Luther King Day, tomorrow we go back to August 28th, 1963, for Martin Luther King's very famous I Have a Dream speech.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream. That my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted. And every hill and mountain shall be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed. And all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' cry. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
All right, it is 9:46, and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, and happy to be joined, as we always are on Sunday, by Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern's Central DuPage Hospital. Dr. Most, my friend, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Dean. Always nice to be on with you on Sunday morning.
We always appreciate it very much. All the talk this morning is about the variant virus that experts are now predicting could overtake the original virus in a very short period of time. How concerned should we be with all of this?
Well, the concern is definitely going to be how contagious it is, and it appears to be much more contagious. And the variant we're talking about, because there's three variants out there that we know of right now. The UK variant, which is the one that we've really tracked around the world. And then there's a South African variant, and then just last week, a Japan variant as well. So the big thing there is going to be, how contagious is it? How much is it going to spread? It appears that the vaccine will work for this variant, which is very important. But then in the meantime, it's going to be, how many more cases are we going to get? Because as we start to add cases, unfortunately, some of those cases end up with a vulnerable population and we end up with hospitalizations and deaths.
This the variants, you know, the way they're describing them, you know, seem like a little, you know, extra sneaky viruses that, you know, can sneak around all the protections that we have right now. Do we need to do something special to protect ourselves from that, or is it pretty much the same as what we've been doing now for, believe it or not, almost a year?
Yeah, it's a lot of basic blocking and tackling, as Dave Ennett would say. But really, it comes down to this virus, when it changes, this is, Darwinism at its finest, the survival of the fittest. So the virus that figures out how to get around some of the defense mechanism that the body may have, or to make sure that it's programmed itself so that it can cause disease quicker, those are the ones that are going to survive. Exactly what we would expect. But now the biggest thing is going to be keep our vigilance for everything we have right now as we get more people vaccinated and we can knock down this variant and really make it a non-issue.
Which makes all the news that we've been hearing about the allocation of the vaccinations all the more frustrating that stockpiles that were said to have been there were not. And that, you know, a stockpile that we thought might be coming to people quicker will not. That's got to be incredibly, incredibly frustrating for those of you who are trying to get needles into people's arms as quickly as possible.
Dean, I can't tell you how frustrating it is. And, you know, the uncertainty of production, the uncertainty of delivery throws a lot of water on this that we're really concerned about. We all have to remember that the science was done to show a vaccine on day one and then a follow-up booster on day 21 or 28, depending on whether you were talking about Pfizer or Moderna. So we are planning, and, you know, people are saying, well, why are we withholding doses? Some of the ones that we're withholding make absolute sense now, right? If you give dose one to somebody and you can't give dose two, what is the science going to show us? We know that the science will show us that you get about 50, 60% protection just with dose one. But really, the big bang to the 90, 95% is with that booster. So, boy, we're really a little bit concerned. And, you know, President-elect Biden with his 100 million in 100 days, when you start to do the math, we have to make sure that we realize 100 million people getting this in 100 days comes out to 200 million doses that we need. So we really need the reassurance and the logistics that we can give this vaccine right to make sure we're protecting everyone.
Now, I had heard that the doses were there. It's just the distribution of the doses that was the problem. Is that not the case?
Well, that was the case for round one here. So when we all got it for the healthcare workers in the state of Illinois, that second dose was held back. In other words, they didn't give us all of them, but on day, it came out to us on day about 19, for the 21 days, we got that second dose. So we knew that the state had those. Therefore, we were able to vaccinate the maximum number of people we could with the doses on hand. But now what they're saying is the federal stockpile has been completely depleted. States, depending on how they acted, Illinois acted in a conservative way, but very thoughtful. Other states went full bore and now are struggling to say, okay, where are we going to get that second dose from? Because that federal allocation, that stockpile is gone.
Now, I'm hearing that numbers are slowing down. The number of people testing positive is slowing down. Is that the case? Because there are sections of the state of Illinois further downstate where they are going to be allowing some indoor dining, some limited indoor dining. They're talking about it in the Chicago area. Is the positivity rate hopeful at this point?
Yeah, I think two things. One, the positivity rate, and two, I think that, you know, Northwestern just announced, you know, that we noted one of these variants. We identified it, so we know it's here in Chicago, and just because we noted one means that it is out there. And whether it's this new strain is not, doesn't cause as much disease, but still can spread quicker. And I think we're starting to see more people complacent about getting testing done. So, we are seeing improvement. I can tell you that the hospitalization rate for the state is down, and that's very reassuring, especially being this time of the year. But I think that opening some indoor dining is probably going to be good. I think we probably have identified that sometimes indoor dining is safer than in-home dining with large groups.
Is the problem of distribution similar in other states, or is this something peculiar to the state of Illinois and the Chicago area?
Yeah, well, you know, Dean, when you talk about distribution, it's two things. One is how many vaccines are we getting, and then two is how are we actually distributing them to patients? You know, you've seen in the news, I'm sure, the long lines in some states, kind of ridiculous. I think Governor Pritzker is saying, hey, you know what, we're going to do this in a more organized fashion. Instead of having people wait in line, let's make sure that we identify the right people, give them appointment times, make sure that it's smoother transition than people waiting in line 5 hours only to find out that they don't have vaccine for them. So there's that issue, and there's the issue that the distribution kind of went out without any guidance as far as, okay, here's state of Connecticut, here are your doses, here's how we'd like you to use them. So many governors and many Department of Health officials had totally different views on how to distribute them and who to get them to. So a little bit more organization on the front end certainly would make this look a lot smoother.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then there were stories of how some of the doses were discarded. They weren't used and simply were discarded. Amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
That is amazing. And that is the sad part. People have to understand that once we reconstitute this, and for the Pfizer one, once we thaw it, we have specific timeframes that we know that the vaccine is good for. I can tell you at Northwestern, we did that. And at the end of our vaccination date, we would have people what we called in the bullpen. So in other words, if we had 20 doses left, we had 20 people on the sidelines ready to come up and take those 20 doses. Some places didn't have that forethought and unfortunately had to throw away doses because they had gone outside of the manufacturer's recommendations.
Unbelievable. We have time for a couple of quick calls. Can Dr. Most explain why indoor dining at restaurants is more risky than shopping at a grocery store or big box store?
Yep. So indoor dining, if you think about it, you know, most places are going to have limits of 4 to 6 people. One thing is the amount of time. So we talk about exposures with the CDC, and it's 15 minutes. So when you're in a restaurant, you're not going to have your mask on. You're going to be sitting at a table for somewhere between 15, 45, an hour with a mask off in discussion. I don't know about you, but when I go into the grocery store, I'm not walking around talking and singing, and I have my mask on. So as long as I clean my shopping cart and do my shopping as I normally would, my exposure to any individuals is much, much lower. So in a restaurant setting, closer individuals, longer period of times, no mask certainly works. Now, I say that, but I also say that in the home setting, because people that aren't going to restaurants are still socializing, inviting friends over, two things happen there. One, they're there for a longer period of time. And two, they're obviously much closer in proximity where you can't control that. So indoor dining will probably be helpful, not only for the economy, but also for our mental health. And then also, if we do it properly, we actually can prove that it'll probably slow the transmission.
I was in a grocery store yesterday morning doing my shopping. I'm in the produce department, and two of the clerks of the store are talking to each other, both of them in different aisles of the produce department. So they're sort of yelling, you know, toward each other so they can be heard. Both of them with their masks are underneath their chins. And I was frozen. You know, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I didn't want to walk anywhere near them. I went way out of my way to get away from them, even though I had my mask on. And I went and I found the store manager. I hate to be like a jerk like that, but these guys are completely ignoring the rules that they're supposed to, talking loudly, and I presume expelling spit, germs over the celery, over the oranges, over the, you know, and, you know, for 2 months, I've been wondering, how did I get COVID-19? I'm not shocked how I got COVID-19 after seeing something like that, of people completely ignoring the rules like that.
And Dean, don't say, you know, you're being a jerk by going to the manager. That going to the manager is allowing him to do some good professional coaching. So as long as he didn't come up there and say, hey, you're fired for doing this, but walk back and said, hey, guys, remember, this is what the expectation is. This is what the science has shown. Please wear your mask. You can speak through your mask. So anytime we have an opportunity to coach, and say, hey, you know, slip your mask up. It slipped down over your nose, you know, and kind of take it lightheartedly versus very being very, you know, militant, I'll say,
right,
is very good. So I think that manager probably appreciated it, because if you noticed it, many people, other people did. And the next thing you know, they're like, I'm not going to that store because it doesn't feel safe.
We have
plenty of other options for groceries.
Hey, excuse me. Your mask seems to have slipped down under your chin.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Kevin, thank you so much. As always, good to talk to you. Have a great week.
You got it, Dean. Take care.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being with us in this abbreviated version of Dean Huchard's Sunday Morning. Northwestern sports coming up, 10:45 this morning. We'll get to that later on, but today on our Sunday show, we are celebrating the 99th birthday of the great Betty White, true national treasure. Born 99 years ago in Oak Park, Illinois. We went back into the vault. We've been so fortunate to be able to interview Betty so many times through the years. But back in March of 2009, she was here in Chicago and came into our old showcase studios on Michigan Avenue. And we had a lovely chat.
What a pleasure to welcome to our studio, Betty White. Good morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you so much.
And I forgot to mention in all of the credits, born in Oak Park, Illinois.
Right across the street from Chicago. The hospital on one side of the street is Oak Park and the other side is Chicago. So that's as close to Chicago as you can get.
Now, I know that you went to school in the Los Angeles area and I think graduated from Beverly Hills High. So were you just a baby when you were here? And
I was born here, yeah, and went out to Los Angeles when I was a year and a half old. That I don't think California was a state yet. I think it was still a territory. But
so unfortunately, your memories of growing up here don't really exist.
I've been back and forth.
Yeah.
So
did you work in Chicago ever? Do plays, films, anything?
I did. I did a play here years ago. I did Any Wednesday here, and I can't think of the name of the theater, forgive me for that, but I've always loved Chicago. When I was growing up as a little kid, my mother and dad were both born and raised in Chicago, mm-hmm, reared in Chicago, and I was always, you know, Chicago early on was, oh, Chicago is so busy and it's so this and that, and suddenly it went through this whole metamorphosis. It's one of the most beautiful cities, not only in the country but in the world. I love Chicago.
Well, I hope we
I'm not just trying to please anybody.
Right. Yeah, I hope we gave you a good impression as you were coming in from the airport yesterday. You came in right in the middle of St. Patrick's Day madness around here that can get a little ugly.
Once we got out of the airport, it got very Irish very quickly. I mean, people of any ethnic background became Irish.
Right, exactly. Betty, when you listen to these clips from, you know, from the Mary Tyler Moore Show or from the Golden Girls, I mean, you know, we were chatting before we went on the air and having a little coffee, but your face lit up when you heard, you know, some of the setups and some of the jokes. I mean, clearly these were high points in your life.
Oh, of course they were high points, but I am the luckiest old broad on two feet that I got blessed with the kind of writing. I mean, the writers on both Mary Tyler Moore and on the Golden Girls, and then latterly David E. Kelly, you can't get any better than that.
Right.
How blessed can you be? And it's all on the page. You know, the actors take so much credit for roles they play. We couldn't do it if it wasn't on the page.
Yeah.
We can help a good show, but we can't save a bad one.
Yeah, well, that's true, but it still is very collaborative. I mean, the writing has to be there, but I can't imagine any other actress bringing to such dimension to the roles that you've brought.
I wouldn't give them a chance.
Not if they didn't want to break their necks that day. Was Sue Ann Nivens as conceived as it turned out to be? I mean, you must have put a little flourish on it and changed it up a little bit.
I don't know where she turned into the neighborhood nymphomaniac, but somehow it worked, and she thought she was so spectacular and so gorgeous and so sought after. It was only in her own mind. Nobody else felt that way.
Yeah. Did you guys have a sense of the kind of television history that you were making while you were doing the Mary Tyler Moore Show? Or, you know, was it, you know, we're going to work today, we've got a, you know, pretty good script, we've got nice people, but, I mean, this will be one of the great television shows in the history of the medium.
It was on for 7 years. I didn't come in until the fourth year. But Mary and her then-husband, Grant Tinker, and my husband, Alan Ludden, and I were best friends. So we sweated out the show with them. We would go to rehearsals. We would go to things, and never dreaming that I'd be on the show at some given point. That first year was tough. I mean, it was very iffy. It didn't catch on right away. Mm-hmm. In fact, they weren't sure it was going to get picked up for the second season. But by the time it got over the 4, 5, 6, 7 years, I think even the network knew they had something.
Yeah. Is there a little Betty White in Sue Ann Nivens? Because, I mean, I've interviewed you several times for different movies and things, and you're always so sweet and you're always so nice. But part of me wonders, is there a little bit of that, you know, evil?
They used to ask Alan that. Sue Ann Nivens, of course, was the perfect happy homemaker.
Right.
She could do anything. She could fix anything. She could cook anything. She could, if you had a spot on your clothes. And Alan, but she was this magnificent cook. And Alan said, well, Betty and Sue Ann are very similar, except Betty can't cook. And so that's about the size of it.
So that was about the size
of
it.
Yeah, and I think everybody got suspicious, Phyllis particularly, when her husband took Sue Ann home from a party, drove her home, and he didn't get in until the next morning.
Yeah.
They somehow had to swerve to avoid hitting a dog, and she got suspicious when he came home with his clothes cleaner than when he left home. So, it was such writing.
This is a little Sue Ann Nivens, and this is so quintessentially Sue Ann. You'll be able to hear it on the speakers.
Why do you want to be on our show? You're the happy homemaker.
Yes, and the happy homemaker is very unhappy.
About what?
I have done that show every day since July 1963. You know what that means, Mary? It means I've been smiling for 11 years.
I never thought of it that way.
I want to cover
all. And that's what it comes down to. That's what the happy homemaker on camera, always, always smiling, Sue Ann Nivens. Always conniving a little bit to see.
And the minute the camera went off, she was a real witch.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we had some other clips. We pulled some other clips also of Sue Ann's affection for Lou Grant.
Oh.
They're so visual. So much of what it is visual, and, you know, wouldn't make sense on the radio. But it was a great relationship.
She finally nailed him. She finally did get him. But he came in the next morning. One of my favorite shows, he came in the next morning, called Mary into his office, went over to his desk and opened the bottom drawer and took out a bottle of whiskey. And he said, here, nobody should get that drunk.
Some great memories with Betty White, 99 years old today, celebrating, remembering an interview that we did with her in studio back in 2009. Some breaking news this morning in the entertainment world. Wall of Sound producer Phil Spector has died. He was taken to a hospital last night and died there. The circumstances surrounding his death have not yet been revealed, but he has been in jail for a 2003 murder. We'll have much more on the news coming up later on, but legendary music producer Phil Spector dead at the age of 81. We continue with our interview today, celebrating the 99th birthday of Betty White, with an interview from our vaults from 2009 when Betty White was in studio and talking about the roles that she's had, these very strong roles for women.
It had to be very gratifying to be on that show also, because so often I hear actresses saying there aren't a lot of really great roles for women. And here are four spectacular roles, spectacularly written, strong, independent, hilarious.
It's just unbelievable. I I cannot believe my luck that at this late date in my life that I'm still working. But there aren't that many good women's roles. But when they are good, I think that's changing a little. I think that's balancing out a little more again now. But when they are good, oh, they're so wonderful.
Yeah, thank goodness that there are. Jim is in Naperville and wants to say hi. You're on WGN with Betty White.
Hey, thanks, Dean. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Real good. Real good. Ooh. Hey, Betty, I wanted to say how much I enjoyed you on Boston Legal. You mentioned earlier David E. Kelly's influence, and you really brought a good twist to that program by introducing a new character, and every week we were able to follow her shenanigans, and I just thought you were wonderful. Did you enjoy that role as much as the others?
Oh, yes, and you saw me. You saw me commit murder.
Yeah.
And you saw me go to trial, and you saw me get away with it. I don't know how David does that, and you saw me rob a convenience store twice at gunpoint and get away with it. And you watch me kidnap my best friend out of her retirement home and get away with it. I don't know how David does that, but it was great fun.
I wish you could see the look on her face as she said it. Ooh, it was great fun. I appreciate the call, Jim. Thank you. Let's go
Thank you, Jim.
Emily and Niles is next. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Betty White. Thank you for being the person you are.
Well, thank you for being a friend. I appreciate
and
that
it's
very
it's just
much.
A pleasure to talk to you because I think we're the same age.
I wouldn't be surprised. 87? Are you that old?
Oh, no. I'm going to be 84.
Well, see, I'm way ahead of you.
Oh, you are way ahead of me because what you do is just wonderful. Not only the acting, but the fact that you are helping animals, and I do the same thing. And I think that's what keeps us going, the fact that you want to help.
Well, I am, again, I say, so lucky. My life is divided into two halves. Half is show business, half is animal well-being. And the two things I love the most, how can you ask for anything better than that?
Right. And most of all, that we are able to do it.
That's right. And get away with it.
No. Thank you so much.
I
appreciate your... And when you were on Regis's show, I was so proud of you. You were the best one there.
Oh, no, that was Password, and I have a special sentimental love for Password because I married the man in the middle years ago.
Yeah, Alan Ludden, of course. Emily, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you very much, Emily.
Speaking of appearing on other shows, you were on the Craig Ferguson show recently, just before the Oscars. And first of all, I'm shocked that you're 87 years old because you look fantastic. That is not showbiz blah, blah, blah talk. You look fantastic.
You've got to go to your Oculus.
But I'm appreciating the Craig Ferguson bit that you did even more now, knowing that, where the end of this segment that you did, Craig Ferguson, was that you're saying something, it's like, I'm out of here, bitch, something like
I do Craig about every, 4, 5, 6 weeks, and he always introduces somebody. At one point, he was going to do his taxes on the air, encouraging people to do taxes, so he introduced this tax expert, and of course, it was me, and I came out. Another time, he was going to get his flu shot the air, and he introduced this nurse, and of course, I walked out, so this last time, I was a Girl Scout. For which I should get a stunt check.
Yeah, it was very funny. Those scenes are very funny. Is it possible for you to have favorite things that you've done, Betty, in your career? So, I ask that once in a while, but I feel like I'm asking who is your favorite child to an actress.
And it is. That's a perfect analogy because which of your kids do you like best?
Yeah.
It's a tough call between Golden Girls and Mary Tyler Moore. I mean, how often do you get opportunities like that, get writing like that, and then laterally to get David E. Kelly writing?
Right.
I mean, you can't get that lucky in one career. So all the nice things that people have been saying this morning about me, I'm taking false credit for that because it's the material that I've been blessed with that makes the game.
Yeah, you're way too modest on that. Let me just get a couple of phone calls because they are jammed on the Sunday morning. Here's Wally in Chicago. Good morning. You're on WGN.
Yes. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Wally. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Just fine. Thank you.
I just want to echo everybody else and say thanks for all of the things you've done in your career. But I just want to let you know that I have had a major crush on you ever since Life with Elizabeth.
You weren't born when I did. You know,
I certainly was. What was that, about 1950 or 51? But I
started in television in 49, so we're celebrating this year. We're celebrating 60 years in television.
Fantastic.
I'll send you my card.
I also wanted to tell you that I really enjoy you on Match Game, especially the problems that you always gave Gene Rayburn with rolling up his pants leg and putting tape on his back and all that kind of stuff. You must have had a lot of fun.
I'll never grow up, no matter how old I get. I'm ashamed of myself.
I think that's what's keeping you so young.
No, but I should have a little dignity at this point.
No. Dignity is so overrated. It really is. Wally, thank you for the call. Here's Mike
thank
in Spring
you,
Grove. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Good morning. Miss Betty White, I just want to say it's an honor talking to you. You're a national treasure. I don't think you realize that, but you are, especially in my life. I Golden Girls was one of my favorite shows because it reminds me of when my grandmother, I used to stay home with to watch that show, and you just made her laugh. And especially the other show was when you guest starred on Carol Burnett's show as Ellen, Eunice's sister.
Sure.
And her favorite episode was when you told Eunice that the chicken that they had that night was really fluffy. and that was just a wonderful, wonderful episode. And I did love you on Boston Legal. Do you know if they're going to do a spinoff? Because the way that they left it hanging.
I don't know. I don't know whether it was that David, he's starting a new show, whether he didn't want to continue or whether the network didn't want to continue. But we all miss Boston Legal. It was a great show, and it left a hole in our TV appointment.
Sure.
TV.
And again, like you were saying before, amazing writing. Amazing writing on
incredible.
That show.
And your character was just so... I look forward to it. I just loved your crazy antics, you know.
You know, I'm going to be a little difficult to live with by the time I get home after all this good stuff this morning.
I'll tell you what, we had such a fun morning that morning. 2009, when Betty White stopped by. There is much more to the interview. Sadly, we're in a squeezed time frame today because of the Northwestern game that's coming up. But you can listen to the entire interview and our other interviews with Betty White as well, all up at WGNradio.com. WGN Radio.com. 10:37, Dean Richards, Sunday morning. You're listening to the Chicago Children's Choir. If you want to get some goosebumps, listen to their version of the song You Will Be Found from the Broadway musical Dear Evan Hansen. It's just one of the many amazing songs that they perform. And they will be representing the great city of Chicago there. On Inauguration Day, they're going to be part of the Stephen Colbert's live presentation, his live show that he's going to be doing on January the 20th, along with Chance the Rapper and Cynthia Erivo and many others. You will be able to see the magic of the Chicago Children's Choir. And it's a pleasure to have joining us right now Josephine Lee, who is the Chicago Children's Choir's president and artistic director. And Josephine, welcome to WGN. Nice to have you with us this morning.
Good morning, Dean. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Doing very, very, very well. Congratulations on being chosen to be part of the inauguration festivities and, you know, the special programming that day that will surround it. Talk to me a little bit about how this happened.
Yes. Well, we were approached by Peter Cottontail, who's the composer, producer of this original song, Together, that he composed for Google.
and we were invited to record on it. And little did I know, it was for the Year in Search review 2020. And it was absolutely extraordinary to hear all of our the artists and for our kids to be a part of it. So we were invited once again at the beginning of 2021 to film with Peter and Chance and Kofi Lass, the narrator. And we invited members of the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra to join us. And so we took all the safety protocols, did all of the rapid COVID tests, and safely filmed it. And what a privilege to be a part of the festivities.
Yeah, I got to think, you know, to have this kind of national profile for this choir is really something quite amazing. Tell me a little bit about the children's choir and how it got started. And, you know, it's offering such a positive avenue for kids when it seems like all we ever hear are negative things about kids today.
Yes, and that is true. There, it's all positive. I mean, this is an organization that was founded over 60 years ago. We'll be celebrating our 65th anniversary next season. Founded during the height of the civil rights movement to bring children of different backgrounds together to create a better world. So it started as one choir in Hyde Park. We now have over 140 choirs in our city, serving every zip code, partnering with Chicago Public Schools to after-school programs in 11 neighborhoods throughout the city. And then, of course, we have a young male ensemble for boys who go through the vocal change called Dimension. And then we have this world-class Voice of Chicago that travels internationally and really serves as, you know, ambassadors of our great country. And yeah, it's really a powerful place. And the children are extraordinary. They come from every background, and over 80% of them come, we subsidize. So it's a really special place. And when you give young people a voice, they're able to do extraordinary things. And
yeah. I've found the same thing with different stories on which we've reported having to do with young entertainers, you know, people who are interested in the arts or music, theater, movies, that when they are given a path to go down, a positive path to go down, they will go down that path. And they avoid all the pitfalls that we hear about all the time in the news, the sad stories that we hear about in the news. So it's great that there's an avenue like that. And fantastic to be part of this special that Stephen Colbert is going to be putting on. It's got to be a high point, I would think, for the choir, right?
Yes. You know, a high point, yes, profile-wise. But I think, you know, for me, every day is a high point with the children, because I see the potential. And when we collaborate and create, especially during this pandemic, we've grown closer together. And I think now more than ever, when they're seeing the state of our world, it's so important for them to know that there's still hope. And if they work together, they can hopefully create a better future for all of us.
Yeah, well, I hope that that's the case. I worry constantly about, you know, kids who are coming up in this insane time in which we're living, with such division in our country, with the pandemic, with so many things going wrong. I don't want that to be the normal for kids coming up. You know, I want them to have a different perspective on what the world is and what the possibilities are. And it sounds like you're providing that to these kids via the Chicago Children's Choir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so important. And music, right? It's this universal language.
Right.
And whether you end up becoming a musician or not, it's the celebration of humanity. As the late Pablo Casals, who's a wonderful cellist, said, perhaps it is music that will save the world.
Let's hope. Let's hope. Let's have more music. In that case, let's have more music. What will the kids be performing this coming inaugural night?
Yes, an original composition. The song is "Together" by Peter Cottontail.
I love that there's somebody named Peter Cottontail, by the way, who is a composer. It has to be said. I know you've mentioned it a couple of times. I love that there is somebody actually named Peter Cottontail.
Yes, and he's in Chicago, and he's absolutely brilliant.
And I'm just sorry that I didn't think of that to be my stage name.
I think Dean Richards is pretty smooth.
I guess it's okay, but it's no Peter Cottontail. But, but they're going to be performing this song together, and as we go out here and get ready for Northwestern basketball, I want to play just a little excerpt of what you'll be hearing on Stephen Colbert on this coming Wednesday night. Josephine Lee, the president and artistic director of the Chicago Children's Choir, thank you for all that you do, and break a leg on this great performance. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for having me. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We had to lose and made some choices. We were forced to choose in the morning.